Okay, today's topic is Rails versus .NET. I've worked for several years with .NET and only more recently transitioned. Wait. That's all wrong.
That's okay.
So that.
Just start over.
That's our first blooper.
My name is Jesse Brown. I work at Clear Function as a senior software engineer.
I'm Daniel Pritchett. I also work here at Clear Function.
Hey, this is David Mahundro. Everyone calls me Mo because my name is complicated and there's too many Davids. I do architecture here. So on the Rails versus .NET topic, most of my experience professionally has been in .NET, although back in, 08, 07, something like that, I started playing with Rails because the infamous blog build a blog in Rails demo came out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's amazing. Look how fast and productive and cool that is. So I built a Rails site that's still up today, and it has no database on it. So it's doing absolutely nothing. But I have followed Rails as a hobbyist up until the last few years or so.
Yeah, I've worked with, this is Jesse, I've worked with .NET for numerous years, and I've done a few hobby developer programs with Rails and Ruby and Sinatra. Just kind of I keep up to date with the ecosystem, and I do really enjoy Rails, so I've got a pretty good experience with both of them.
And I've definitely done tons more work in Rails than in .NET. I'd say Clear Function has a pretty strong .NET background or company DNA. We do have some Rails products, and everybody here has worked with Rails, and so we've done, as a company, more .NET consulting and then internal Rails product development. So today we want to talk about our experiences with the two different platforms and which things we prefer Rails for and which ones we prefer .NET for. So I've got a quick list here of Railsy questions. First one is, which types of jobs do you guys think are more appropriate for which stack?
Yeah, I'll start off. I think that Rails is generally better for rapid prototyping. I think it's probably by far the best, you know, Rails, the best web framework for prototyping out anything. It's just so much faster to lay down an actual working website without having to think too much about, you know, overall architecture. And that's not to say that there isn't an architecture, it's just that it's prescribed for you by Rails pretty heavily. And so I like Rails as sort of a starter. And if you don't really know if the product's going to kind of leap forward, you know, if it's going to be really popular, then I think starting with Rails might be a problem if you know it's going to be popular. But I think starting with Rails is always a pretty good decision.
Yeah, I could talk about that for a few hours, so maybe I will after we hear what Mo has to say about Rails versus .NET.
We had a client a while back that was actually a .NET project, but it was a Greenfield project. And it was interesting seeing how some of the barriers that we ran into early on in terms of how often you had to ask the question, what do I use now? And when you start with like an MVC project, there isn't like, there are some things like the Microsoft Entity Stack and there's Entity Framework, and those are the ones recommended by Microsoft, but it's like there's not the same level of, here's what you do,
yeah,
as there is with Rails. It's like with Rails, there's pretty obvious, like, yeah, we use these gems here. And just the amount of time. Oh, yeah. And I was working with someone who had more Rails experience on it. And there was just lots of questions like, wait, you mean we have to do that by hand? Really? We have to do that by hand?
Yeah. Remember Elijah Wood and Back to the Future? You have to use your hands. Was this a baby's toy? That's what I feel sometimes.
It's like, he's in the movie? What?
Yeah.
He's
very
the
small.
Baby.
But
oh,
look
man.
It up. It's him.
And that really goes down to gems in Rails, or Ruby particularly. But gems are like so much better than NuGet packages. And I think that's mostly because the dynamic language of Ruby. Being able, and if they're all open source, you actually get the Ruby code. You don't get some black box assembly that you then have to kind of figure out. You have to look at someone's documentation to figure out exactly how it works. You can get in here and you can modify and fork these Ruby gems with little effort. And because a lot of the ones for Rails, at least, use the Rails pipeline and everything, you get gems that go all the way from client script. You know, like Attachinary is a good example. They give you script tag basically that they output and generate in the pipeline. So like you don't have to write the JavaScript that deals with like uploading image files. And it goes all the way back to the database. So you get, you know, you generate with a rake task the schema that they're gonna, that they support for you. And you have all these active record extensions that just attach to models in your database without having to, yeah, you just don't have to go very deep. I mean, it's one line of code to attach as many files as you want to an existing Rails model with just a little bit of setup and configuration in the beginning. That's really just not true in .NET. You see all the NuGet packages, and there's a million steps. Most of them only deal with a very small part of what it is. Attachinary in .NET would, I'd probably say it's not even really possible with the way the NuGet packages are done today. So that's, I think that's where a lot of the Rails benefits come in, especially for like, you know, what do we do for authentication? Well, there's a bunch of different gems out there for Rails, but there's pretty much just the standard .NET Microsoft one for .NET. There are a few competitors for things like that, but they don't really do full stack views and scripts and database.
Well, on authentication too, it's I can probably lose count of how many .NET projects I've seen that have done authentication the wrong way too. It's like, oh, we're going to encrypt this password, whereas Devise, oh, it's hashed using bcrypt right away.
Right.
And you have far better defaults because of that. I mean, identity is now in there, but it doesn't give you all of the same things that Devise does.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so extending you just end your up user with models not nearly as easy as it is in right. the Rails ecosystem.
Authentication is one of those things I feel a little bit insecure about never having tried to implement, but I'm also glad that I didn't release one that I wrote poorly.
All right.
That's kind of funny coming from the guy who does mostly Ruby and Rails, because Rails by default sort of lean you towards doing your own authentication. Yeah. We talk about authentication, it's probably the worst example, because if you read like the Rails documentation, the first thing they says is like, don't bring in Devise or anything, just write your own until you need it. And I disagree with that 100%, because like you said, Mo, that's the way it is in .NET, and turns out everyone will just do it wrong. So I'd much rather bring in a gem.
So I know in the Rails world, there's kind of a constant tension between different constituencies. People building Rails might be super experienced consultants or working in a product company, and they're going to have needs and preferences that don't match at all those for people who are brand new to the community. So you're going to have somebody to speak for those new users who aren't going to be showing up at your Rails team meetings to speak for themselves. Do you guys have any kind of feeling about that as far as .NET goes? I guess Microsoft mostly hands down whatever they feel like their market needs.
One of the things, and this is getting a little bit to the cultural differences a little bit, it's funny when you talk about the defaults and some of the good defaults, because it's like, it's one thing for us to say that Rails just gives you so much out of the box and you don't have to do a lot of things. But then when you look at some of the things that Microsoft has tried to do in the past to solve that, it's, you end up with lots. I just remember some of the web forms demos where it's like you end up having a SQL query in your view in a designer built thing. And it was just like, this was not the right approach.
Right.
And it was the wrong abstraction, but they were trying to solve everything for you with this one thing, and then it wasn't going to scale well. And
They do that a lot, and I think a lot of that has to do with the static type language. You know, it's really hard to design an API, and the way Rails gets around it, Rails gems in general, is it's Ruby. You have the Ruby. People just sort of hack it away, and then they end up forking into their own project, where that's just not true in .NET. Because you don't have that code in your project, you're more likely to just abandon it and roll your own than you are to modify it and push it back up as like a, you know, if you just need a flag somewhere so that it goes down a slightly different path or does validation in a different way, you're much more likely to edit an existing Ruby gem than you are a .NET NuGet library. It's just, I think it's just a fact of life that you get the compiled binaries down in the .NET world versus the Ruby code that you can step into and be like, oh, it wouldn't be very hard to change that.
Yeah. Could I ask you guys to advocate for the other side at all? I know you've done lots of paid work in .NET, and I'm sure that was for companies where .NET was probably more appropriate for their business need than Rails would be.
I'm not trying to sound like I'm advocating for Rails.
I just wanted to hear the other
side.
But
I guess maybe it sounds like Rails is winning in our mind. But yeah, I mean, I've done way more .NET than I have Rails, and I do really like .NET. So .NET has a fantastic performance characteristics, one.
Right.
It always has compared to Ruby, just the raw Ruby stuff. You know, request per second, .NET's way ahead in that, you know, not having to run the script or, you know, having it precompiled gives you a ton of performance benefits.
That gets right back to the rapid prototyping you mentioned. When you already know what you need to do, it'd be nice if it was fast, right?
Right. Yep. And also the, like the Vue technology, I know it's a little thing, but like Microsoft's Razor syntax for their MVC framework feels light years ahead of the ERB syntax in Rails, in my mind at least. That's one of the things that I miss probably the most. You know, the Razor syntax was great, and it's just delightful sort of language to use. You know, it feels like C sharp, and it doesn't feel like I'm having to wrap everything in braces all the time.
Right.
It just makes it sort of just flows into the HTML documents, where that's not really the case in ERB. You just have these little code nuggets that are just sitting everywhere.
Yeah. I will say that ERB is in the Ruby standard library, so you could use it for a hand-rolled tiny project that isn't Rails-related, but I can't really speak for it being as comfortable as the Razor experience. Do you think Razor is better just due to being designed 10 years later, or is there something about it being statically typed that gives it more potential?
I don't think it's a static type for me. It's just the way that it just integrates into... It's just less noise. It's just a less noisy templating framework. You don't always have to wrap it in, you know, less than percent sign. You don't have to do that on both ends. You just at sign and you just write code. And so I think and part of it probably comes because the syntax is so strict in .NET that they can do that.
That's a good point.
Figure out exactly where your code begins and ends 99% of the time to make that happen. Where in Ruby, you know, you've just got a much broader set of rules that you'd have to, that could get confusing.
Definitely sparser templating options in Ruby, like Haml or Slim, but because Ruby is so dynamic and doesn't have quite as many fence posts to mark off exactly what's happening syntactically, it makes it harder to parse complicated code, maybe multi-line stuff, when you're already using significant white space.
So here's a sort of random question. One of the things, so I'm a Vim user and a Vim fan, and I have tried writing Razor outside of Visual Studio before. And if I don't have the comfort of Visual Studio there, just as an example, there aren't as many like syntax highlighters that correctly parse Razor outside of Visual Studio. So I'm curious, like, how Razor would feel, you know, outside of Visual Studio.
Yeah. Well, I guess there's always VS Code, which might be an avenue for Microsoft to care enough to release some more open Razor syntax highlighting or parsing rules that could be leveraged by other editors. But you're suggesting that only Visual Studio really cares about Razor right now?
I haven't tried Visual Studio Code to see how it works in terms of editing Razor, but that is a good question, and it might be something worthwhile to see. The other thing, too, is it embraces C sharp.
Yes.
If you look at like Slim or Haml, they embrace Ruby, but then they embrace Ruby so much that they almost lose the HTML.
Right.
Like, you don't have tags anymore. It's almost more about like nested selectors or something. And that's one of the things where it's like, if I'm writing in a Vue language, I want to still have the HTML right there as a first class citizen with the language.
Yep.
Okay. So you mentioned everyone's favorite editor, Vim. We have a note on our list here to talk about tooling. You guys want to talk about Ruby tools, .NET tools, what you're into?
Yeah. So first of all, this is definitely where .NET wins by, you know, a mile, I think. Visual Studio is fantastic. It's a fantastic editor. It's by far the best IDE if you want an IDE, and close behind these days is Visual Studio Code, like you mentioned, their little text editor built on Atom. It feels a lot closer to Visual Studio than any other just text editor has in the past. And the Rails doesn't really have that sort of tooling. You've got RubyMine from JetBrains. They're pretty good. It's not the best, but tooling's one of those things that I'm learning is a lot more complicated than it seems at first. Like, I really like the IDEs, but I really love the command line tools that exist on Rails. So, like, it's tooling versus, I don't know, I'm not sure what to call it. I wouldn't call the console tooling, but it really is sort of tooling. I mean, it has your static, it has your generators in there.
It's that, almost coupling. You know,
scaffolding
it's
and
like,
all that.
Yes.
I mean, .NET is moving, with .NET Core, they're trying to introduce command line tooling so that you're not as tightly coupled to, oh, you have to have visual, I mean, on the .NET side, we've all seen the, oh, your CI server has to have Visual Studio installed before you can compile it.
That's the worst thing.
I mean, so, you know, now that's not the case, but there is a tight coupling there. I don't know that... it's nice to be able to not have to have a big IDE to work like in Rails, but at the same time, I know I can find a bug in Visual Studio with a debugger. I still struggle to find bugs. Now, having a REPL in place where I can pull up Rails console or something like that is absolutely great.
Navigating a large code base is significantly easier in Visual Studio just because .NET. It's not necessarily Visual Studio. No. It's just that the being a static language instead of a dynamic language means that, you know, when you want to find where something's coming from, it's a lot easier. Where Rails, you have all the Active Record and Active Record extensions that sometimes finding the source of what's adding something or what's, you know, shadowing a method that you didn't think was, you know, you write a method and suddenly you have a duplicate method. You're like, well, who wrote that other method? I don't see a method here. That doesn't really happen in a static language because they can give you those warnings ahead of time when you write it and be like, yeah, did you mean to shadow this? Because that's not something you normally do. You know, the editor knows in advance that that's a problem. Where in Ruby, people actually do it on purpose quite often to get around constraints of the libraries that they're working with.
Right.
So, Daniel, what are your thoughts on Visual Studio coming from the Rails world?
Okay, I definitely enjoy the Visual Studio experience, particularly using ReSharper to be able to jump many levels deep to find definitions. It's a little off-putting when I get to the very bottom level and it's a DLL and all I get is the help docs. That's one thing that Jesse mentioned a while back. In Ruby, you wind up on GitHub reading the source of all the open source gems that your project is built on pretty regularly. I've gotten pretty comfortable jumping around on GitHub reading every little line of Ruby. And you'll have a copy of the gem running locally that you can edit just to see what happens if I put a breakpoint here. Or in my case, it'd be more like a print line because I'm not much of a true debugger user. So anyway, I really dig Visual Studio and I'm just bought in entirely when I'm working .NET. I use Visual Studio. I use ReSharper. I've got the full version of SQL Server and I do like it. I've never worked on a Ruby or Rails code base as big as the .NET one I've been working with lately. And it is kind of hard to imagine how it could ever get that big and how I would deal with it if it were in Ruby. I know people who work on very large Rails code bases, and it sounds pretty rough. You definitely hear a lot of people saying beyond a certain size, you're really going to want static types. Then you also have people who say that nothing should ever get that big before it just forks and becomes two projects instead of one big one.
What happened to Twitter? They were on Rails for a long time. Twitter. Where are they now?
That was the very beginning of this episode, we talked about what's more appropriate for .NET versus Ruby, and you mentioned Rails is great for prototyping. The Twitter example is one people have been talking about for a better part of a decade. They launched with Rails, and I guess they managed to prototype rapidly enough to find their market, and it got really big, and suddenly it was so big that this fairly immature Rails ecosystem couldn't keep up with their performance needs. And the whole thing's been rebuilt out from under them with, I believe, a mostly Java backend. They've got a lot of homegrown Java-based services and, you know, inventing new data stores, new queuing, new everything, rebuilding and re-architecting every little piece of what holds Twitter together. And people make a oversimplified argument that this somehow implies that Rails should never be used for anything. But these are problems that are nice to have. Your application is so busy that you can hire 100 of the most experienced, most educated computer scientists in the world to redesign every little piece of Rails for you fit to purpose.
Most people
are never going to have
Facebook's
that kind
the
of
same
revenue.
Thing with PHP. They write things in PHP, but not really. I mean, they've written so many extensions on PHP that I would I would argue it probably doesn't look like PHP at all. You know, I haven't been in their code base, but I've seen, you know, Facebook developers talk at conferences and things like that. And the PHP that they write is not the PHP that any of us write.
Right.
It's just they've got, you know, C extensions for pretty much everything, because it turns out PHP is really slow at stuff. But instead of just rewriting everything, they write extensions around the framework that they had to get the most out of it. And I'm sure now that they probably still got PHP in a bunch of places, but it's probably almost all like C or, you know, Erlang or something. I mean, there's probably places that have all kinds of frameworks behind that PHP.
You know, Rails. GitHub is actually a good example of a company that has succeeded with massive volumes still running on Rails, at least on the front end.
Yeah,
I know they have some Erlang on the back end. They have heavy, heavy caching.
I'm always impressed with GitHub speed. You know, that's one of the things that as a Rails app gets very large, sometimes you see performance problems.
Yeah. One of the things that Rails, because it is in the open source world like that and is running on Linux, there's not the single culture where if you're in a .NET world, you don't often see other stacks involved much. Maybe your build script is in something else or something like that, or your continuous delivery pipeline is using Ruby somewhere. But if you hit the limits of, say, what .NET's giving you, or you want to do something else outside of it, you almost have to go true, like, okay, we're going to have to call off to a totally different instance of something now. Whereas in the Rails world, it is very common to integrate other technologies in place.
And I guess we've talked about cultural differences between Rails and .NET communities. I think what you're hinting at there is that .NET is basically the go-to language for the Windows platform, and there's not nearly as much variety behind that, whereas Rails is just one of many choices in what you might call open source web application development, usually going to be on a Linux server somewhere, maybe on Heroku or something. But if you're already running Linux and you've got some Rails modules that need optimizing, it is going to not be running SQL Server. It's probably on Postgres or MySQL or some other open source data store or multiples. And being able to carve out one piece to rebuild with a more appropriate tool is probably going to have less friction than if you'd started from a huge .NET monolith.
Yeah, .NET, like you said, it sort of keeps you in the .NET ecosystem. And because you're on Windows, you're sort of forced to just keep with .NET, I think. You know, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does limit your options. You know, Redis is on Windows, but Redis wasn't always on Windows. And so that's one of the best examples. If you suddenly needed a really fast in-memory key store, your options were pretty much non-existent on Windows.
Right.
And for most IT shops, you know, you don't really want to mix and match your operating systems. It's just not something that most smaller shops are going to do. And so the idea of like coming up with an in-memory data store that's, you know, it just didn't exist. And so most people want to, so people who are running Linux and running Rails, it's really easy just to spin up a Redis instance on what you've already got and make that work. Wherein, you know, the Windows world, you would have to spin up some, you know, proprietary for-pay in-memory storage system. I will say there's a lot more for-pay things in the Windows world as well. You know, component vendors and Redis-like database things that you would just purchase for .NET. Because there isn't all the open source alternatives, and it prevents you from having to waste your time setting up all those things on the open source environments you're less comfortable with. So it's just, it is sort of a Windows versus Linux ecosystem.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jess. You definitely can get, I guess, batteries included in a broader sense with Windows stuff. Maybe the server will have more of the things you need available from your .NET runtime. One thing I've noticed, I mean, most anything that you can think of is probably available as a package install on Linux, but it's going to be a lot harder to find it. They're not necessarily going to have the same level of marketing or community consensus on what's the right thing to do. So that can be rough.
Yeah, I will say architecture-wise, Rails is, it's nice that it has the defaults for you, but you're pretty much on your own as soon as you decide to do anything that's not exactly the Rails way. It's just not, the conventions are so well-defined that if you pretty much have to follow them, you know, obviously you have other frameworks you could drop. You can go to Sinatra and kind of have it your own way. But if you're in Rails and suddenly you want to like skip a part of the pipeline to do something, like that's not really an option. Where in .NET, because you're paving your own architecture, you really have flexibility over, like, over time if you decide that what you were doing before wasn't really working. Maybe the way that, you know, the services all hook together no longer makes sense. You can just change that in the future and just make all the new ones do something a different way, where that's not really the case in Rails. You pretty much always make controllers the exact same way. You can throw in different gems to output differently, but it, yeah.
Yeah, one of my Rails mentors always told me just to not fight the framework in general. If you find yourself wanting to do something and Rails clearly was not designed with that intention, that it may be possible to do it your way, but probably won't pay off in the end. So maybe you feel like you're doing it the slow way or the dumb way or the wrong way, but if it fits along with the overall design and expectations of the system, it might be worth it in the long run. Or just dump out of Rails entirely and rebuild that piece as a standalone.
Curious what the ratios would be like in the Rails world, or should I say Ruby world, with alternative web stacks. There's something showed up on Hacker News fairly recently, another Rails alternative. Sinatra has pretty wide use, but right, not for a full web app, more for APIs, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There are alternative stacks in .NET, but, you know, in terms of like how many people use Nancy or some of the others versus MVC, obviously there's still web forms too,
mm-hmm,
but I don't know what the ratios would be if, like, in the Rails world, Ruby world, more people choose that, or if it's everyone sticks with Rails because it's, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Rails definitely feels like the incumbent. I've seen people branching out almost just because Rails is the default. They look for other things to do for fun. Like, I know a guy at a big Ruby company, and I think their cash cow is built in Rails, or was, but internally they do lots of Sinatra microservices, and I imagine if they built something new in Rails that internally that would not be cool anymore. Like, Rails is for your new small theoretical stuff.
Rails is for your monolith, right? You know, yeah. I wouldn't ever think to use Rails for microservices in general. It's so heavy. I mean, it just has so much that executes, you know, just all the time. It's mm-hmm. just, it's pretty big.
And you guys have mentioned the defaults a few times. That's one thing that I really appreciated about Rails. My IT career did not start immediately with web application development. So having a framework with a lot of opinions, specifically in areas that I didn't have the experience to have my own well-formed opinions about, is really nice. I mean, if I try to build something in, say, Node, I wind up having to do a lot of research and thinking and polling to figure out, of these 500 different components that I'm used to in Rails, does this even exist in the Node world? What do people prefer? Which one's trending up or down in terms of maintenance effort? And it's really nice when you jump into a system where maybe everything is not the best in breed, best of class for its particular segment, but at least there's some cohesion and a lot of thought been put into usable defaults.
Yeah, I thought one thing that's kind of cool about Rails, watching it evolve over the years, are the included gems that change over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rails as a community leader doesn't just stay with their own gems. You know, they use community gems as well, and so they switch, you know, their servers over the years so that they're, you know, by default, people, you know, use Puma now, where right. It wasn't always the case back in the day.
Really? I didn't know it was the default.
I was thinking it was something. Yeah, I think it's the default now, if I'm not mistaken.
Cool.
Okay, well, maybe it's not. Someone's telling me it's something else.
I've been using it as my go-to for a while, but
I think it's the default in production, nice. Or maybe it's the default for most people when they really want to go to production. Okay. I think it's the most performant that people tell you to switch to Puma. So maybe it's not the default, but the mm-hmm. fact that, like, I know that, you know, TurboLinks have changed quite a bit. I know it's the same gem, I think, because it's the Rails team behind TurboLinks, but they've made massive API changes around that and making it, you know, the community didn't like them. Now they sort of do. They've been good curators for, like, the Rails project and the default gems, I think.
It's an interesting thought to think about where CoffeeScript would be if Rails hadn't picked it as a default.
No.
Right.
You know.
I hope it's in the gutter where it is now.
Oh, I was a big early fan of CoffeeScript. I recognize that it's going to die now that parts of its stuff have been integrated with the mainline branch of JavaScript. But I liked it, and I'll miss it.
Yeah, I mean, it's... there wasn't, you know, things like, I mean, Babel and TypeScript and some of the other things that are pushing the JavaScript boundary now, they probably would have still come out. But I do feel that CoffeeScript encouraged that. I mean, there's others. What's the the closure script? I mean, there's other, you know, maybe more on the, I don't know if you'd say the fringe or not, but not as widely used. And
yeah, CoffeeScript has a much different philosophy, and I don't think that it's likely to be deprecated by any release of JavaScript.
Oh, no.
It's like a whole new run, or another language entirely implemented on the JavaScript runtime. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Microsoft even got in that game a little bit. Don't they have a C# to JavaScript project that they own? I think they own it now. I'm not sure. There were some over there were some over the years, and I'm pretty sure Microsoft actually backs one of them where it's you pretty much write C# and they just compile it down to JavaScript. They have like system.io and stuff that they've sort of compiled down. I'm not sure.
To say that.
We should talk about database tooling a little bit, I guess, database frameworks. That's one point that's vastly different between the two. And there's good and bad points on both. I think that there's some points to be given to both on this. Entity Framework versus Active Record. So Entity Framework I have the most experience with, and mostly the code first stuff. I don't really deal with designers. I don't really want like some visual designer of like, you know, throwing out all my database tables and having it generate some stuff behind the scenes. It's not really anything that I had any experience or liked doing, so I will stay away from that one. But code first is sort of their more progressive approach to database tooling, and it takes some cues from Active Record. It has migrations, things like that. It's pretty explicit as far as, you know, you being able to define all your database parameters, what's required, what's nullable, default values, indexes, and all that stuff. It's pretty close to Active Record. They're pretty much the same in that way. The framework part, when you actually query, I think is superior than Rails. Like, link, as they call it in .NET, link to objects or link to any framework. I'm not sure what they actually call it these days. Yeah. It's great. It's really good at generating most queries. You can get some gnarly queries, just like you can in Active Record.
Right.
But for most cases, I think that it generates really, really good SQL. Now, that's against Microsoft SQL Server. Active Record, it's pretty good. I like the way it works.
You know, but there's a lot of... So one thing I noticed a lot in the Rails community is there are people who know Active Record and don't really know SQL. So they wind up building some really hairy stuff and don't realize it. Where if they knew a little bit of SQL, they might have a better understanding where they're going. Do you see that happening in .NET at all? Are there web developers who don't understand
one of the
databases?
Things, at least with some of the prior jobs I've had, there will be people who specialize. And maybe that's because .NET tends to be used in larger businesses, enterprises, or whatever. You'll hear, I'm a back-end developer. I'm a front-end developer. And so the back-end person has spent lots of time on a code base that's 10-plus years old that may have started with a Sprox-only approach. So they know SQL like the back of their hand.
Oh, for the Rails developers who've never heard that before, that's stored procedures. I learned that months ago.
But you look at Rails, for you to do stored procedures there, Active Record migrations, you don't get to use a schema RB file. You actually have to dump it to a full SQL file for that to even work. But then at the same time, the front-end .NET devs or the devs who have mainly worked with an ORM, they also... don't know SQL like so. It's yes and no.
Yeah. You don't get as many though. You don't get nearly as many, I don't think, as the Rails community. I think there's a good chance that a lot of Rails developers don't know SQL at all.
Yeah.
Where I don't think that's probably as common in .NET. I'd say I think part of that is because Entity Framework, the way that you do like relationships between objects can be a lot more difficult and less. You know, if you needed to get, you know, line items through this person's invoices, that's sort of hard to write in any framework. So sometimes they'll end up making either a ton of queries and then it gets slow and then they just write a bunch of SQL to get around it because they know SQL.
Right.
Where Rails sort of makes those associations easier to kind of automatically show up where you want them. And they just let Rails
do
a query and it's okay.
Active Record migrations better than I do EF migrations, though.
Okay. Hands down. Migrations in Entity Framework are very rigid, which means the main difference I find is that Rails migrations only run in production. And so, like, refreshing your dev database or making your dev look like the schema file that's checked in is infinitely easier instead of having to run through each migration, and you might be in some weird state where you were on the branch before and then you came back from vacation and now, like, the migration is not written for you anymore, but you're in this half-baked state. Getting it back to what the branch is on is, like, you know, really, really hard.
Personally, yeah, there was one thing that I've been biting my tongue on for the whole episode, the cultural differences, Microsoft or the Windows ecosystem versus open source. In the open source ecosystem, I feel like things are usually designed towards the Unix philosophy, which I'm not sure I can give a good job of explaining it, but basically your tools are all processing streams of text in and out, and each tool is supposed to be small and do one thing and do it well. So Mo was talking about, I think it was Mo, talking about a lot of the features and niceties you get out of Visual Studio and how you don't really have those available to you when you step out of Visual Studio. And you mentioned some useful OO term about how all those things were interlocking, where if you're not there, you don't have it.
You're talking about the tightly coupled sort of?
Yes, tightly coupled. So with the Unix philosophy, all these tiny tools can be composed in unintended ways.
Yeah, into something more meaningful.
This is my list sorter, this is my tool that splits sentences into words, and this is my tool that uppercases things. And you can string these things together. Effectively, the shell becomes your environment in a way that it might not be for a Java or a .NET programmer. And that's really powerful, and it's a perspective that a lot of developers just don't get into while they're in an IDE. And that's just been a pet issue of mine for a long time, and it's not really something that I proselytize about too much, but I'm super excited about it whenever I get the chance to build some crazy shell scripts that do something quickly.
Well, I mean, just as an example of that, if you have an issue like if I have a production issue with a Rails app, I can drop into a REPL against it and I can start inspecting data. On .NET, I've had some experience with debugging memory dumps from production.
Right.
So the tooling there in terms of dealing with a memory dump, I'm more familiar with it. I know there's GDB on the Unix side, but I don't know it as well. But, I mean, I have seen multiple times where someone, oh, we've got to install Visual Studio on the production web server or something like that.
So
or remote debug it. Or,
right.
You know, it's like because there's really only one way to do that. You
right.
either have WinDBG or you have Visual Studio.
Kind of on that subject, like the logging and Rails stuff, exceptions could be really cryptic in a dynamic language. Because if you aren't familiar with how conventions work, that's
right.
one thing that can really bite you.
Yes.
For hours at a time. You're like, what is this cryptic error message? Where do you expect a module?
Yeah, we were just joking about that this morning. We were contemplating adding a new column to a table, and the concept was private users or private comments, I think, on a web app. We decided to not use the word private anywhere close to our database design because Rails will take those words and coerce them into methods and classes and all kinds of stuff. And eventually, naming something anywhere close to a reserved word is going to blow up in your face.
Yeah, there's conventions around the word type, which gets me every time. I make a table and I'm like, yeah, this is a type of a thing. And so I make a type column and instantly Rails always blows up because type is reserved for like making multiple types. So if you have like a user table and you want to have a student and a teacher, by having the type field, you never query against the abstract base class. And so it's a bizarre thing that once you learn it, you think you're going to remember it, but sometimes you don't. It just wastes a lot of time.
Yeah, speaking of cryptic debugging, I was helping a guy this morning who's just trying Rails for the first time, really, and he wanted to start the app, and his error message was file not found. It turned out that he used the default database, which is SQLite, but he didn't know to run the magic commands to create the database and fill it up with tables. So file not found means the default is a file-based database, and you don't know that. So
yeah, I'm convinced README Markdown files exist only because of like Rails and Unix people. Because in the Windows world, you just hit F5. That's how that works.
Sometimes. Well, that was a good discussion on Rails and .NET, and we talked about lots of different things as far as some of the tooling and the cultural differences, and we talked about some of the defaults. We spent a lot of time looking at just what starting a project greenfield with .NET versus Rails looks like, and even getting over into the database side of things.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, the answer, as always in development, is it depends. And we hope we gave you some information to make that decision for your next project.
Yep. Both tools are great. Use them all.
You've been listening to It Depends, a podcast by Clear Function. Clear Function is a group of happy engineers based in Memphis, Tennessee. We partner with visionaries to bring their ideas to life. For more information, check out our website at clearfunction.com.